Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special edition of Your Call. Today wrapped up day two of Donald Trump's second impeachment trial. The Democratic impeachment managers showed new video of Trump supporters storming the Capitol, and they attempted to prove that Trump incited the insurrection by showing several of his speeches and tweets about a, quote, stolen and rigged election. In their opening arguments, they called Trump the insider-in-chief who reveled in the chaos and destruction caused by his supporters on January 6th. Representative Eric Swalwell of California said Trump's conduct was deliberate, planned, and premeditated. It was not just one tweet or one speech. Representative Madeline Dean of Pennsylvania said this attack never would have happened but for Donald Trump. And Representative Joe Neguse of Colorado said the rioters intended to kill Mike Pence and Nancy Pelosi. And here is a clip from Representative Joe Neguse.
Five people lost their lives on that terrible, tragic day. A woman was shot dead 50 feet from where we later certified the election results. And for those who question just how bad it was, criminal complaints recently unsealed by the Department of Justice are more than revealing. You'll see one of these documents on the screen. In the charging affidavit of one of the leaders of the Proud Boys, we learned that members of this group said, I'm going to quote, they would have killed Mike Pence if given the chance. In another, we learned of a tweet in real time while they were in the building stating, we broke into the Capitol. We got inside. We did our part. We were looking for Nancy Pelosi to shoot her in the frickin' brain, but we didn't find her. And for anyone who suggests otherwise, these defendants themselves have told you exactly why they were here. You'll see this in the trial. That in the halls of the Capitol, on social media, in news interviews, and in charging documents, they confirm they were following the president's orders.
And that is a clip of Representative Joe Neguse of Colorado today. We are going to spend the hour talking about the day's events. So if you'd like to weigh in, if you watch the day's events, if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Joining us now is John Bonifaz, a constitutional attorney and co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, a national nonprofit that fights for free and fair elections. On Monday, six organizations, including Free Speech for People, issued a letter to top Democrats calling for live witnesses during the trial. The letter says, quote, Trump has been impeached on the most serious charge ever levied against a president, that he incited an insurrection against the United States. For the sake of presenting the full case to the Senate and to the American people, the trial must include witnesses to Trump's high crimes and misdemeanors, end quote. Hi, John. Thank you so much for staying up and joining our show tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. It was a very long day. I'm sure that those who watched it are pretty tired right now. There was a lot of information. We saw new video, and the Democrats really did a meticulous job of laying out their case with speeches, with tweets, and then with videos. What really struck you about the day's events?
Yes, I think the House impeachment managers made a very powerful presentation of why Donald Trump should be convicted by the Senate for inciting this insurrection. What stood out in total for me was the nature in which this president has for this former president now for so many days leading up to the January 6th insurrection, fomented this big lie that the election was fraudulent, that he had somehow won in a landslide, which was untrue, and led his supporters to the point where it was clear that what he was asking them to do was to storm the Capitol to stop the certification of the Electoral College votes that Congress was engaged in doing, and to, in fact, go after Mike Pence and others in Congress who were not siding with him in seeking to overthrow this free and fair elections.
And they did it by pulling together his speeches, his tweets, other interviews that he did. Can you just talk about, from a legal perspective, how powerful is that in making their case to connect these dots?
Well, I think it's very powerful. And I think the evidence is overwhelming that the Senate ought to convict Donald Trump and disqualify him from ever holding future federal office. That being said, the focus here needs to be to present not just to the Senate as the jury, but to the American people as a whole, all of the available evidence. And that evidence comes through not only the videos and the audio and the tweets and news reports. It needs to come from live witnesses. And so from the standpoint of presenting this evidence, that's really the missing piece that we're urging the House impeachment managers and the Senate to take on. For example, there are live witnesses to bring forward as to what Trump did or did not do in face of understanding there was violence happening at the Capitol after he left the rally saying he was going to join them and went back to the White House. There are witnesses from within the White House, that Trump White House, who ought to be called to testify. Senator Ben Sasse went public with the fact that he had been in touch with White House officials who said that the president was delighted with what was happening at the Capitol in those hours during the violent insurrection, that he couldn't understand why everyone else wasn't enthusiastic like he was. Those are officials who can come to testify. The head of the D.C. National Guard, the former acting Secretary of Defense, these are others who need to testify because they reportedly may have been told to stand down during this insurrection, to not come to the defense of the Capitol Police, who were outnumbered, to the Metropolitan Police. So there is critical evidence that needs to be put forward during the insurrection that occurred as to what Trump was doing, knowing the violence that was taking place that he had incited.
Have you all received any response from the Democrats to your letter calling for live witnesses?
We have not, other than that they would take a look at our letter, but no, there has not been any formal response to the substance of the letter. And I think that we have to be clear, based on all the news reports, that there is a political interest here in not having a long impeachment trial, not interrupting the agenda that the White House under now President Biden has and members of Congress have to deal with a host of critical crises facing the nation, and therefore that this impeachment trial should not go on for a lengthy period of time. And I think that's a very unfortunate political decision because what it means is that we will have the most serious charge that can be levied against a president, now former president, with respect to the impeachment power, that being inciting an insurrection seeking to overthrow the constitutional government we have, and not have a full airing of all the available evidence and the facts for the Senate and the American people to hear. And I think that's a big mistake. And I also think that it's not beyond the possibility that if this trial were needing to go on for days beyond, you know, the scheduled time that they want to have it in by early next week, that other business, other Senate business could take place, and schedules could be worked out to ensure that that happens. But what ought not to happen is that the public and the Senate are not given the full airing of the evidence that needs to be made available to all of us.
Last Monday, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham went on Fox to say that even calling one witness would result in a drawn-out trial. He said you open up a Pandora's box if you call one witness. What are your thoughts about that comment?
I think that comment is actually one of the best examples of why we ought to call witnesses, because obviously Senator Lindsey Graham, who clearly is in the corner with ex-President Trump and wanting to see this go away quickly, is trying to threaten those who want to seek a conviction of Donald Trump, that if they try to call any witness, he will strike back with somehow a call for other kinds of witnesses, although he can't alone do that. He has to have a majority of the Senate join him in calling any witnesses. So it's really a hollow threat. But nevertheless, the threat itself shows how scared he and Donald Trump and others who are standing with him, who are aiding and abetting this president, aided and abetted this insurrection, how dangerous they understand it is if witnesses start getting called. And certainly there are members of this jury in the Senate, like Senator Hawley, like Senator Cruz, who did participate in aiding and abetting this insurrection. They were the ones who helped allow for a delay in the counting of Electoral College votes by objecting on false premises to certain votes in Arizona and Pennsylvania not being counted. And they ought to be brought before the full Senate and for the public to testify. Even though they're jurors, they're also witnesses to this. And we heard during this impeachment trial today that there was a phone call that Donald Trump placed to Senator Tuberville of Alabama. Senator Tuberville ought to testify. Certainly Donald Trump ought to receive a subpoena to testify. He'll fight that subpoena in the courts. But you know, there were others who overheard that call, and the fact that he was seeking to try to get Senator Tuberville during this violent insurrection, while these senators were already in hiding in a secure place, trying to prevent any harm coming to them, that his call was focused apparently on wanting Senator Tuberville to further delay the county Electoral College votes. That's what his focus was, not on trying to stop this violent, seditious attack on the U.S. Capitol. All that needs to be aired out more fully as well.
CNN is reporting that several Republican senators say the footage played by House managers throughout the afternoon was chilling and they were shaken by what they saw, but they said they probably will not change their plans to vote to acquit Trump in the impeachment case.
Yes, and that may be the fact, even with live witnesses being called. I don't suggest that calling live witnesses will change some of these minds of Republican senators who seem so bent on refusing to abide by their oath of office and the oath they've taken as jurors to be impartial and simply protect this former lawless president and the violent insurrection he incited. I don't doubt that their minds may not be changed by anything. But there is a larger purpose here in addition to trying to change their minds, and that is for the American public as a whole to fully hear this kind of evidence and not have a rushed impeachment trial. And if there's any opportunity and any chance that there is to be a conviction, then we ought to do all that we can to provide that chance, and that would involve, I believe, calling live witnesses. You know, if we were in a courtroom type trial, and the prosecution stood up and said, "Your Honor, you know, we're going to present video evidence. We're going to present audio evidence, but we don't need to call any live witnesses. I mean, we know those prosecutors would not be seen as fully doing their job. And I appreciate the role that the House impeachment managers are taking and the short time frame they've had to prepare this case and the powerful presentation they've made thus far. But again, it is a strategic mistake not to call live witnesses and to try to rush this trial to a conclusion before doing so.
This is a special edition of Your Call, and tonight we are joined by John Bonifaz, a constitutional attorney and co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, a national nonprofit that fights for free and fair elections. And if you'd like to talk about what you thought about today's events, if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. So let's talk about some of the arguments made by the Democrats and the evidence they presented. One of the themes of the day was that, well, this is one of the main themes, is that Donald Trump was constantly sowing doubt about the election. He constantly said the election was stolen. Starting 6 months ago, he said he would only lose if the election was rigged. If he lost, the election had to be rigged. He said this over and over again. And then toward closer to the election, he added, fight like hell. And so this started in May. And here is a clip from Representative Joaquin Castro.
Here's what he said.
Can you give a direct answer? You will accept the election?
I have to see. Look, I have to see. No, I'm not going to just say yes. I'm not going to say no.
Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
Senators, the President of the United States said, quote, there won't be a transition of power. There'll be a continuation. President Trump was given every opportunity to tell his supporters, yes, if I lose, I will peacefully transfer power to the next president. Instead, he told his supporters the only way he could lose the election is if it was stolen. In tweet after tweet, he made sweeping allegations about election fraud that couldn't possibly be true. But that was the point. He didn't care if the claims were true. He wanted to make sure that his supporters were angry, like the election was being ripped away from them. On May 24th, 6 months before the election, he tweeted, it will be the greatest rigged election in history. How could he possibly know it would be the greatest rigged election in history 6 months before the election happened? And on June 22nd, more of the same, rigged 2020 election, it will be the scandal of our times. Again, about an election that had not even happened.
That is a clip from Representative Joaquin Castro of Texas. John, you are co-founder of an organization that fights for free and fair elections, Free Speech for People. Trump made so many claims about dead people voting. I mean, just lie after lie. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on this at a time when Republicans are already introducing more than 100 bills across the country that would further suppress the vote.
Yes, this is a very dangerous moment for our democracy where the right to vote is under attack. And we saw it directly from the Trump White House and from President Trump in those statements that Congressman Castro rightly highlighted, showed that he was setting the stage for his big lie, his claim that the election was fraudulent when he would likely lose, as he saw the numbers looking that way. So he set that stage, and he set the stage for this violent insurrection. And we were quite involved, along with many other public interest organizations around the country, in critical election protection cases to stop illegal voter intimidation, to ensure that people could vote safely during this pandemic, to protect against voter suppression. And yet, the response from this president was to paint this false picture that voting by mail was going to lead to massive fraud, that, as you highlight, that he made claims that dead people would vote. There's no evidence whatsoever for any of these false claims. But despite that, you have this response from his base in state legislatures trying to roll back the protection of the right to vote, to make it even more difficult for people to vote. And this is really a fight for our democracy that we have here. There are those who want to see it be that less people are able to vote, that the less that people are able to vote, the more they're able to stay in power or try to win elections. And then there are those who want to expand the franchise to make democracy work for all, to ensure that all voters have the right to an equal and meaningful vote, as is protected via constitutional precedent. And that's really a fight of our times for our democracy and for the promise of free and fair elections.
You know, I just got my number wrong. I said 100 new laws, but according to Ari Berman, who covers these issues, voter suppression, for Mother Jones, he just tweeted today, there have been 165 new voter suppression laws introduced in 33 states this year. 165, and it's only February 10th.
Yes, and we have to stay vigilant, right? Because the reality here is that this will be a drumbeat, that many of these state legislators who want to try to restrict the franchise are going to continue in claiming falsely that there was fraud, therefore we have to make it more difficult for people to vote. You know, the idea of voter ID laws, the idea in Arizona, there's a proposed bill that would allow the Arizona legislature to overturn the certification of the vote in the state by the Secretary of State, which was certainly what they wanted to do with this last election that they couldn't do. You know, these kinds of bills are small d anti-democratic bills. They're counter to the promise of free and fair elections, and we need to be vigilant in making sure they either don't get passed, or if they do, somehow that they get challenged in court for being unconstitutional.
The state of Georgia is getting a lot of attention, and we'll talk about this in the second half of the show, because Trump is under criminal investigation for pressuring the Georgia Secretary of State to, quote, find 11,780 votes. As Ari Berman points out, on the first day of Black History Month, Georgia Republicans introduced 9 bills to make it harder to vote, including ending automatic voter registration, no excuse absentee voting, and mail ballot drop boxes. He says this would be one of the worst voter suppression laws ever passed.
Yes, and I think that, you know, Georgia is a battleground on this, because obviously what happened in Georgia, both in the November election and in the runoff election, is an example of what happens when you fight to ensure more people are able to access the ballot and participate. And now there's an electrified interest on the part of voters in Georgia to participate in the political process, even more so than before. And now the response is, well, we have to restrict the vote. And of course, this is aimed primarily at African-American voters, this kind of level of restriction. I will say that on the issue with respect to President Trump's effort to try to overthrow that free and fair election of the presidential vote in November in Georgia, we issued on January 5th, the day before the insurrection, an op-ed the Boston Globe published that called for new impeachment proceedings based on the recording that came out just 2 days before that of that phone call between President Trump and the Georgia Secretary of State, and that alone, we argued, served as the basis for new impeachment proceedings, because it was such a violation of the oath of office, such an abuse of power for him to try to solicit election fraud, to try to overturn a free and fair election. And then, of course, we updated those articles of impeachment the next day with the violent insurrection that he incited. But there's no question that the backdrop to this insurrection just occurred the very day before that, or the days before that, I should say, with respect to his call to that Georgia Secretary of State.
Let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Michael in El Cerrito. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi. To me, one of the most damning evidences against ex-POTUS was the fact that of what he did in the afternoon of January 6th, which it was reported he did nothing and walked around the White House feeling elated. I'm wondering who could you get to come as a witness to come and testify regarding that? Are you going to ask Ivanka or Jared or Donnie Jr. or Eric to come and testify?
I think it's an excellent question. I think that not only would I suggest all those as possible witnesses, but there are aides who are not as well known, who were in the White House at the time, who could be called to testify. There are those on the Senate side who were making calls, on the House side who were making calls into the White House, pleading for help, pleading for the National Guard to be called. Many of them know who they were calling and what conversations they were having, and they can provide those witnesses to come forward, and as can members of Congress speak about the efforts they made, and senators to try to get help from the White House that never was coming during those crucial hours. But the underlying point is a crucial one, which is the president takes an oath to protect, preserve, and defend the Constitution, and it is a gross dereliction of duty, the worst ever example of a dereliction of duty, that in the midst of a violent insurrection on the U.S. Capitol, that he did nothing, and that perhaps even beyond doing nothing, that he ignored pleas to help with respect to the National Guard and even potentially told them to stand down and not assist the Capitol Police while they were being overrun by these violent insurrectionists.
And to the point that Michael raises, Representative Joaquin Castro noted that the rioters turned on Pence by about 2:15 that day, and their attempt to find Pence in the Capitol was being reported on TV, which Trump was undoubtedly watching, according to Mother Jones. But instead of urging his supporters to end the assault, at 2:24, Trump tweeted an attack on Pence, saying, "Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution." And then Joaquin Castro played video of a rioter reading the tweet on a bullhorn. Looks like they were going up the stairs to the Capitol. So he was actually reading the tweet on a bullhorn.
Yes, they were fully aware that the president was continuing to support this insurrection, that he had called them to go to the Capitol to engage in this insurrection. And they were fully aware during the insurrection that he was calling on them to keep it going. Congressman Castro also said it was somewhat of an offhand comment during his presentation, but he said at one point, "We will probably learn much more in the future as to what efforts, if any, the president made to stop help coming from the National Guard or the Department of Defense." And that reference to learning more in the future is really a call for witnesses. I mean, why would we wait? As much as I, again, appreciate the powerful presentation that Congressman Castro and the other House impeachment managers made, why would we wait for that evidence to be revealed in July when you have the power of the subpoena via this impeachment trial to bring those witnesses before the nation right now, when it matters, before any vote on whether to convict or acquit this charged ex-president?
Well, thank you for calling in, Michael. And you are listening, if you're just joining us, to a special edition of Your Call. We are talking about day two of the impeachment trial. If you watched, if you read anything about it, if you heard it on the radio and you'd like to talk about what you heard, what are your thoughts? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. tweet us at Your Call Radio. John Bonifaz is a constitutional attorney and co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, a national nonprofit fighting for free and fair elections. Six organizations, including Free Speech for People, issued a letter on Monday to top Democrats calling for live witnesses during the trial. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after a short break. This is a special edition of Your Call. We are going over day two of today's impeachment trial, and we'd love to hear your thoughts, questions, comments. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today's guest, or tonight's guest, John Bonifaz, is nice enough to stay up late with us. He's a constitutional attorney and co-founder and president of Free Speech for People. We have an important email from Stuart, who writes, "What is your opinion regarding the John Lewis Voting Rights Act? Why has it not gotten much attention? It seems like we should all be pushing hard on the Dems to blow up the filibuster and pass this act."
I could not agree more. I think it's a critical law that needs to get passed, as does SR1, which is the omnibus bill that would engage in helping pass a number of critical election reforms. And really what is blocking this is the filibuster, which, as former President Obama has said, is a relic of Jim Crow, and needs to be ended. And we're at this juncture now where either we're going to advance the democracy we have to protect it, to ensure that the franchise is available to all, or we're going to allow this minority within the Senate to stop these critical changes from happening. There should not be a 60% vote requirement for passing legislation in the U.S. Senate, and yet that's what we have with this filibuster rule. It needs to be abolished, and we need to pass that new Voting Rights Act.
We talked about some of the voter suppression laws being introduced in Georgia, and according to the Georgia Recorder, if the John Lewis Voting Rights becomes law, Georgia will likely be among the states requiring preclearance before lawmakers could change voting rules.
Right. So the reason why we need this new Voting Rights Act is because the Supreme Court gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act that, of course, was passed in 1965. And that Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act provides for preclearance, or provided, I should say, for preclearance from any jurisdiction that had a history of this disenfranchisement of voters. And that dealt with certainly large parts of the South, and as well as other parts of the country. And the Supreme Court gutted that and declared it unconstitutional in a wrong decision in Shelby County. And now we're faced with this question of how we remedy it through this new Voting Rights Act, because what we've seen since that decision by the Supreme Court is an opening of the door for all these anti-democratic laws, small d, laws to getting passed at the state level that make it harder for people to vote, that disenfranchise people, that suppress the vote. And that's exactly why we need that preclearance provision, why it needs to be put back in the Voting Rights Act, which is what the John Lewis Voting Rights Act would do.
Well, thank you for the email, Stuart, and we will definitely do a show about this bill in the coming weeks. Let's go next to Steve in Berkeley. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, it's been quite a week, and you know, I've been kind of super relieved to think about the fact that you know, Mike Pence didn't try to throw this thing into disarray and stop the process, you know, while those guys were marching. I know that's what Trump wanted, and I can't imagine what would have happened then. But really my question is more about, you know, what are the odds of getting a Supreme Court where maybe the majority of justices are appointed by somebody who won the majority of the vote? I don't think we have that situation today. I can take my answer off the air.
Well, I mean, I think we've got certainly critical structural issues with respect to an electoral college that needs to be abolished so that we're relying on the popular vote for President of the United States, not, you know, on this Byzantine process that is dating back to slavery times with respect to wanting to somehow protect the smaller states or really protect the South, you know, from pre-Civil War times. But I think that what your question gets to is the nature of the current Supreme Court, and I do think that we have to look seriously at the way Republicans who controlled the Senate at the time under this prior Trump White House dealt with the process of confirmation hearings for members nominated to the Supreme Court. And the stain that's on the court because of that, the way in which that was done, particularly the last nomination so quickly after Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, just before an election, these are calls for expanding the court and to ensure that that we have a Supreme Court that has the integrity that we all require it should have. So I do think that these calls to expand the court are critical. But again, if we don't end the filibuster, we're not going to be able to get to that kind of place. But I think right now the Supreme Court is under a cloud because of those nominations by this now ex-lawless president and the way in which the Senate treated those nominations. Particularly the Kavanaugh and the Amy Coney Barrett nominations. I think we have a serious challenge here. But even Gorsuch is there, as we know, because Senator McConnell held that seat open for Donald Trump. He would not allow hearings on Merrick Garland's nomination that President Obama made back in February of 2016. So all three of these seats that Trump was able to fill are tainted.
Well, thank you for the question, Steve. Let's go next to Anonymous in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have been curious about some news reports over the past few weeks about some tours that had been given at the White House and over at the state capitol. In fact, one of the Proud Boys, I think, actually live tweeted and was saying, yeah, I'm having a nice tour over here. So if you want to talk about witnesses, we might talk about some of those folks who are giving the tours, kind of like that. I'd like to know your thoughts. Thanks. I'll take my answer off there.
Thank you so much. Well, yeah, we've been wondering about this, and the New York Times had a piece on the 6th, so just about 4 days ago. Capitol Police are investigating whether lawmakers gave pre-riot building tours, as Pelosi names leader of security review. I'll just read from this piece. The Capitol Police said that they had opened an investigation into whether members of Congress inappropriately gave visitors access to the Capitol ahead of the storming after several lawmakers raised concerns that their own colleagues might have allowed members of a pro-Trump mob inside in the days leading up to the assault. John, do you have any updated information on this?
I don't have updated information, but I definitely think it's another example of why live witnesses need to be called, because the caller is absolutely right that there are members of Congress who've stated that they saw these tours happening on January 5th, and there needs to be a full accounting of how that happened. You know, this is a situation, obviously, in the midst of this pandemic where these tours were not being given, you know, and haven't been for months. And yet there, you know, the day before the insurrection, you see these large groups roaming around the Capitol. You know, not only do we need to know further information about that, which can come through this trial, but we also need to know how the insurrectionists apparently knew where members of Congress were hiding out in secure locations in the Capitol. How did they know the specificity of where to go? Because we know from now criminal indictments that have been issued, and we know from news reports that, in fact, at least some of these insurrectionists had that information. Who told them that information? Where did it come from? You know, some of these people, they've already been charged. You know, they don't probably want to get charged further. So bring them under oath, penalty of perjury for lying, and testify as to how they learned that information. Let's have a full airing of all this evidence.
And Eric Swalwell actually retweeted a tweet from Pete Sessions, a Republican from Texas. It's hard to tell when he tweeted this because it was deleted on Twitter. And Pete Sessions wrote, "Had a great meeting today with folks from Stop the Steal at our nation's capital. I encouraged them to keep fighting and assured them I look forward to doing my duty on January 6th. And then Representative Eric Swalwell, who's an impeachment manager, retweeted and said, "Evidence. House GOP Rep. Pete Sessions met with terrorists who attacked Capitol and killed officer. He told them to, quote, keep fighting. They listened. Out of a consciousness of guilt, Sessions deleted this tweet."
Right. Right. And not only that, but you had 140 members of Congress vote to overturn this free and fair election after the insurrection had been finally pushed out of the Capitol. They had secured the Capitol. And that evening, they come back, the House and the Senate, to continue the counting electoral college votes. And after all that violence had occurred, after the loss of life that had occurred, and the injuries to Capitol officers that had occurred, all that, 140 members of the House and you know, 7 members of the Senate, you know, decide they're still going to vote to overturn the results of this election, to subvert the will of the people, to attack our democracy. They were aiding and abetting this insurrection by doing that, and they let people believe that there was a basis for overturning this election with this big lie that there was fraud that occurred when there was no evidence of it. You know, I do think there's accountability that needs to go clearly beyond Donald Trump, but it starts with Donald Trump. But there's no question that Congresswoman Cori Bush's resolution to investigate members of the House and Senator Whitehouse's efforts in the Senate to investigate those in the Senate who aided and abetted this needs to go forward. And if it comes out that they, you know, as we already have with much of this, that they were part of this process, they don't deserve to remain in the House or the Senate. When you aid and abet an insurrection, you don't deserve office. And in fact, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution makes clear that you're disqualified from office for participating in an insurrection.
Well, thank you for that important question and bringing that piece back up, because there's so many moving parts to this. So thank you for that. This is a special edition of Your Call, and we're joined tonight by John Bonifaz, a constitutional attorney and co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, a nonprofit fighting for free and fair elections. We've got just under 10 minutes left. So if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's go next to George in San Francisco. Hi, George.
Hi, good evening. You know, a lot of the mention today that caught our ear was that the plan was to grab the speaker and her counterpart in this federal succession. If you examine the part of the Constitution that applies to succession. And then if you take someone like who may or may not be operating on his own hook, like El Trumpo, we think that probably he was supposed to grab Nancy Pelosi and then, and of course, the vice president, and then throw them in his dungeons. And then what does that make him, being the legitimate president with the knocking off of the two successors?
Well, thank you for that. And Representative Stacey Plaskett, who represents the Virgin Islands, during her testimony, she said the insurrectionists' intention was to murder the speaker and to murder Vice President Pence. What did you make of that, John?
Well, it was chilling, but very compelling evidence that she laid out. And I think it's clear that that was their plan. But I think it arguably went beyond that. They were interested in stopping the counting of the Electoral College votes by any means necessary, with whatever violence might take place. And had they reached the Senate before they had evacuated that gallery, or had they reached the House before they had evacuated the House gallery, then I think we would have sadly potentially seen a massacre of members of Congress and members of the Senate, and they were trying to stop that vote counting no matter what. So I think it was a terrible day in American history, but it must be met with the accountability that's required under the Constitution now, and that requires a conviction of Donald Trump and a barring of ever holding future federal office, and then accountability for all those who aided and abetted this violent insurrection.
We also heard audio of Nancy Pelosi's staffers who were hiding under a table. So you walk into a room and then there's another room, and her staffers were hiding in the second room. The rioters got into the first room and they were pounding on the second door, and luckily they didn't get in. Speaking of violence, we don't have that much time, and we're going to do a whole show about this because it's so important. I wanted to play another clip where Representative Joaquin Castro says that on November 5th, when Trump tweeted, "Stop the count, stop the fraud," Trump supporters showed up at election offices in Maricopa, Arizona. Some of them were armed. They were intimidating employees from doing their jobs as workers risked their health because of COVID to go to work. A police investigated a threat to stop the vote in Philadelphia, and then supporters used armed force in Atlanta, Milwaukee, and Detroit. Joaquin Castro, representative from Texas, says Trump supporters believed it was their duty to fight to stop the count, so they showed up at election centers across the country. And here is a clip.
Police took at least one man into custody who was carrying a weapon. And this happened all over. In Atlanta, in Detroit, and in Milwaukee. His supporters used armed force to try to disrupt lawful counting of votes because they bought into Trump's big lie that the election was stolen from them. President Trump's months of inflaming and inciting his supporters had worked. They believed it was their duty to quite literally fight to stop the count, so they showed up at election centers across the country to do just that.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election. We were winning in all the key locations by a lot, actually. And then our numbers started miraculously getting whittled away in secret.
They will be hiding. They will pay. They will be destroyed because America
you know, we're almost out of time, John, but there was a piece that NPR played by Johnny Kaufman with member station WABE in Atlanta. He spent months reporting inside the elections department in Fulton County. And he points out that Trump and his allies zeroed in on Fulton County, where every staffer except one is black. And Rudy Giuliani spun a conspiracy that targeted Shay Moss and her mom, Ruby Freeman, who helped out as a temp worker in that office. He compared them to drug dealers. And I mean, they just talked about how afraid they were, how they got death threats, how people visited their homes. I mean, we really need to spend more time on what people have gone through as a result of this.
We absolutely do. And I appreciate you highlighting this. I mean, this was an outrage with respect to the way election officials were treated and the way in which Donald Trump and his supporters were engaged in illegal voter intimidation, which is not only illegal from the standpoint of leading up to an election and on election day, but it's illegal with respect to the counting of ballots. Under the Voting Rights Act, voter intimidation is illegal all across the board. And we actually brought a case in federal court in Washington, D.C. on the eve of the November election on behalf of Mi Familia Vota, a national Latino civil rights organization that made this very argument that Donald Trump and his campaign were engaged in threatening illegal voter intimidation leading into the election and with the vote counting. And we had a, you know, George W. Bush appointee judge, Judge Richard Leon, who said it was speculative, that there was no basis for these claims. And now we know there certainly was a clear basis for these claims, because we saw what happened and what Congressman Castro showed was so critical. And that really, I think, was a harbinger for what came about on January 6th. There was already this kind of threat that was happening to so many election officials all across the country who were merely simply trying to carry out their duty of ensuring that every vote would be counted.
Well, we will put a link to that piece at yourcallradio.org. It really is worth listening to and spreading the word about. John Bonifaz is a constitutional attorney and co-founder of Free Speech for People. It's a national nonprofit fighting for free and fair elections. John, thank you so much for staying up late with us tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And we are going to be preempted tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. We're not sure what's going to happen next week, but if we are preempted next Monday and Tuesday, we'll be live again on Monday and Tuesday nights. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing tonight's show. Thanks to Damian Miner for engineering our show and keeping our station and our studio running. Thank you for your emails and phone calls. And you can find links to articles at yourcallradio.org. This is a special edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.